I'm Brian Cho from the University of Illinois, and this is work done with Marcos Aguilera at Microsoft Research Silicon Valley. So the title of this work is Surviving Congestion in Geodistributed Storage Systems. So our context here is geodistributed data centers. So increasingly we see web apps being deployed across geodistributed data centers. And we believe that in this context, not just the apps themselves, but we want the app data itself to be replicated across these data centers across the world. The first reason we want that is disaster tolerance. So we don't want a data center going down to make us lose all of our data or all of our customers' data. And the second is access locality. So if you're here in Boston, you don't want to have to continually go across the world to get data for your application. One thing that could actually could possibly hinder replicating your data is the congestion between these geodistributed data centers. So the reason why there might be congestion is just simple economics. So unless you're a very big company with infinite resources, bandwidth is actually pretty expensive. So for example, if you're not this big company, you usually have used technologies such as leased lines or MPLS VPN. And here, bandwidth is expensive. So a particular instance of this technology that we found, it costs around $1,000 for each megabit per second per month. So obviously, if this puts pressure on you economically, you don't want to provision for your peak usage. More likely, you'll provision just enough to get by. And this is why congestion occurs, because when you do have peak usage, then you'll see congestion. And there's many machines in each data center that you want to talk to each other if you're replicating, and that's going to cause even more pressure on your precious link. So the reason why congestion is important is because it causes significant delays. So if you look at the figure on the bottom, between 10 and 30 seconds, we experience congestion. And we're sending basically a TCP-based RPC during this phase. And you can see that the response times actually increase to sometimes over a second. And this has been observed in the wild. For example, it's been observed between Amazon EC2 data centers. And this is significant because users obviously don't like delays. So a study done by Nielsen has shown that if your delays go over a second, users will start abandoning your site. So we've talked about geo-replication and congestion. What our goal in this work is to create a storage system that has replication techniques that are well applied in this context. So before I go into the meat of our talk, I just want to give an overview of some replication techniques. The first category I want to talk about is weak consistency. So this is systems such as Amazon's Dynamo system or Yahoo's Peanut system. And these, if you apply these to geo-distributed data centers, they actually have good performance. simply the reason is because the updates here are propagated asynchronously. So you don't have to wait for a reply from a data center from far away. Of course, the flip side to this is that you could get potentially inconsistent data. So this puts more pressure on, for instance, an application developer who has to reason about all these different inconsistent states. The second category I want to talk about is strong consistency. And this includes traditional replication strategies such as quorum-based strong consistent algorithms and Paxos-like state machine algorithms. And here, now of course the problem here is that you have to wait for updates to propagate to some of these data centers that are far away to maintain consistency. So now a lot of applications might be fine with this actually. You'll pay maybe 100 milliseconds to talk to a data center across the world. But as long as you're doing that, a lot of applications might be fine. Now, the real problem is what we just talked about, congestion. So it might be very hard to meet these applications requirements if you have these congestions and for instance, second delays. So that's where our work comes in. So our contribution is a system called Vivace, where we've developed a strongly consistent key value store, which is resilient to this congestion that's across geodistributed data centers. And our main approach in Vivace is we developed new algorithms. So we've developed these algorithms such that they have small messages with critical information, and then we split that off to large messages that have that don't have critical information. And what we do is we prioritize these small messages when we're sending them across data centers. So the challenges we face while doing this is, first, we still want to provide strong consistency, so we have to be careful about how we develop these algorithms. Second, we need to keep these prioritized messages small. So if these prioritized messages end up being very large, then we're not really doing much because the prioritized messages could congest each other anyway. And finally, we just want to make sure that we don't incur a lot of overhead when there is no congestion, because that's obviously the common case, and we don't want to just pay a penalty every time just so we can do better during congestion. So I'll now jump into the meat of our talk, which is our Vivace algorithms. So these are based on previously well-known traditional strongly consistent algorithms, but we enhance them. And this is kind of a very high-level picture of what I'll be talking in the next slides. Basically, the traditional algorithms would be sending these large pieces of data across the world, basically. And you'd be held hostage to any congestion between these links. Our approach instead is to send small amounts of information and to prioritize this information. So concretely, we implemented two different algorithms. The first is a read-write algorithm, which is fairly simple. It's based on a traditional quorum algorithm that guarantees linearizable read and write operations. The second is a state machine replication algorithm, but because this is a slightly more complex, we leave the details to the paper. So what I'll do is I'll quickly go over the traditional quorum algorithm, and then I'll show how we change these algorithms, we enhance these algorithms in Vivace. So first I'll go over the traditional write, which is actually very simple. And notice here, so these are three different data centers, and then try to imagine them in different parts of the world. So if you want to write data, and this is a key value store, so basically we have our key which identifies what our data is, the val which is the actual chunk of data, and the client attaches a timestamp. So the timestamp is used throughout the algorithm to be able to tell which is the most current data. So you send this to all the replicas. And the thing to notice here is that you're basically sending this large value across the network to different data centers. So you send this, you have to send this and then wait until this has been received and then a reply has come back from a majority of these replicas. And then finally, your client can say that its write is done. Now we move on to the read algorithm, and this is actually slightly more complex. And you can see how, so there's actually a write-back phase, and this is kind of what ensures the strong consistency. So the client first just sends a read request with the identifying information, the key. Then again, it has to wait for a majority of replicas to reply with the actual value that it wants to read. And the timestamp of the value that the replica contains. So again, just notice that we have to wait for a large value to go across between these data centers. And so what the client does is it takes this majority of replies, and then it finds the timestamp with the largest value. So this is the this is the data that I would like to read. But for this algorithm, we're not done yet. So we need to make sure that all the replicas actually agree on what has the on the data that has the highest timestamp. So the client, it basically does something identical to what it did for the write algorithm. It sends the data back with the largest timestamp. So you can see again we're sending this value again across across the wider network, and then you have to wait again for a majority of replies. And then once this happens, of course, the read is done. So we briefly went over how this is done in the traditional quorum algorithm. Now I'd like to move on to how this is done in Vivace. So the first thing to notice is we have a new kind of set of replicas. So we call this the local replicas. And so we'll see how these are used immediately. So this again is identical to the write that we sent in the traditional quorum algorithm. However, we make sure that this is only sent to the local replica, so this message is contained within your data center. And then again, you wait until a majority have acknowledged this. The next step, actually, is that we send the identifying information, the key and the timestamp. And we actually don't send the value across the network. So because we're not sending the value, we know that this is a small message. So what we do is we prioritize this message so that it can bypass congestion. And again, this finishes once we get a majority of replies. So actually in Vivace, at this point, we can say the write is done. You might think that's kind of strange right now because replica 1, 2, and 3 don't actually have the value yet. But what they do have is a consistent view of the identifying information for this value, so the key and the timestamp. And so what happens after, which is after the client knows that the write is done, is actually the local replicas go ahead and propagate this value along with this identifying information to the replicas to the replicas in the other data centers. And notice here that this is a large value, but it's not in the critical paths, and we don't prioritize these messages. So once those messages finally get across, then the replicas actually they continue to have this consistent view of the key and the timestamp, but they also attach the value to this. So if we just go ahead and compare the writes, the traditional algorithm we saw had one remote round trip time basically. but remember that this round trip time is susceptible to congestion. In the case for Vivace, we still have a remote round trip time, but we've prioritized this message. And we've added another local round trip time. Now I'll move on to Vivace's read. So in the case of the read, instead of just asking for everything at once, we actually ask just for the timestamp. So we give a read timestamp message. And again, we can prioritize this message because we know the exchange will not contain this large value. And so we wait for a majority of replies from these the exchange of prioritized messages. And of course, the acknowledgement will also have a small message. Then what we do is we take, since we've read the timestamp, we take the largest timestamp as we did before. But now we ask actually for the data that's identified by this key and this timestamp. So this is different from the previous algorithm because we're actually asking for a particular data with a particular timestamp. And so what this gives us is that instead of having to wait for a majority of replies in this case, we can just wait for a single reply that has this value. And again, we're sending this large value, but in the common case, where the replicas all have this value, we'll only have to wait for a replica that's in the local data center to reply. So we don't have to, we're not held hostage to the communication between data centers. Finally, we still have to do the write back, but again here, we emit the value. So we only write back this small identifying information again, and so we prioritize this message exchange. And finally, when we get a reply from a majority of replicas, we're finally done. So the read in this case is done. So if we compare what happens in the read algorithm, the traditional algorithm we saw had two remote round trip times because of the write back. But again, both of these round trip times could be susceptible to congestion. In Vivace's case, we have two remote round trip times, but again, these are prioritized. And then we also have a local round trip time that we have to pay. So I've gone over our algorithms, or at least the read-write algorithms. So I'd like to move on to our evaluation. So the topics for evaluation were, first, we wanted to show that we could have a practical prioritization setup. Second, we wanted, this is kind of the main result, is the delay that we see when there is congestion. So we compare the traditional approaches to Vivace, both for the key value store operations, and we built a web application that's based on Twitter that uses our key value operations. Finally, we looked at what happens to delay without congestion, and this is just to measure, again, our overheads compared to the traditional algorithms. So our evaluation setup looks like this. Basically, we had a local cluster at Illinois, and we talked with the Amazon EC2 data center, or machines on that data center that were located in Ireland. And so the way we implemented prioritization was that we did DSCP bit prioritization on our local router's egress port. So basically, out of, I guess, a lot of prioritization schemes, we just chose the simplest that we knew. Basically, because we thought the bottleneck would be at this egress port, because of the limited bandwidth, we just add prioritization at this port. And then finally, we generated congestion using iPerf processes located both in Illinois and Ireland. Oops, sorry. So the first thing we wanted to see was it's kind of a sanity check to see that our prioritization scheme works. And so we ran a simple ping experiment using TCP. And this is almost the same figure you saw in the introduction, basically showing that while the normal ping messages get delayed, our prioritized ping messages don't. These are our main results, and it shows how well Vivace does under congestion. So this is six plots, but I'll just zoom into one of them. So this shows a comparison between the read algorithms. So just to recap, the traditional reads, they rely on two remote round trip times. And the Vivace read has two prioritized remote round trip times and a single local round trip time. And so you can see with Vivace's read, we actually succeed in avoiding congestion delays. So this is a CDF showing the latency for a number of requests that we sent. And for the traditional read, for maybe the first 40% of requests, we see a slight around 20 millisecond increase. And this is basically the buffering delay that you could see on the egress port. But more significantly is the next half of requests. Basically, what happens is because there's congestion, there's significant packet loss, and then TCP has to end up resending these messages. So you can see in the around the 90th percentile, we actually get we actually see for the traditional read latencies over a second. Finally, the final point of evaluation that we did was we looked at how much overhead Vivace has without congestion. And basically, the takeaway is that we saw no measurable overhead compared to the traditional algorithms. So they had the same delay characteristics. So in conclusion, we proposed two new algorithms. The read-write algorithm that we showed in this talk, and the state machine algorithm that you can see more details in the paper. But for both algorithms, the approach we took was that we avoid this delay due to the congestion by prioritizing just a small amount of critical information and sending that on the critical path. And we did so while still providing strong consistency. We kept the prioritized messages small because they only contain the identifying information. We also showed that we avoided delay overheads even when there is no congestion. And we also showed this under a practical prioritization infrastructure. So kind of in conclusion, I just want to say that we believe basically that we can use a similar approach for many different applications in geodistributed data centers. So we think that the careful use of these prioritized messages can be an effective strategy in this context. Thanks, and I'll answer questions.
Hi, Fred Douglas, EMC. It seems like there's a bit of an apples and oranges thing going on, unless I'm just confused. If you look at what you do for your writes, mm-hmm. you turn your remote data write into a local data write, and then said, look how much faster we are. So you eventually dribble out the local write to the remote thing asynchronously, mm-hmm. and so hopefully it happens. But the thing is that you're returning, and you're saying you're declaring success based on the fact that you've gotten a response from the remote ones saying that they have the metadata, and the local ones saying they have the data. Mm-hmm. But that means that you're changing your reliability, because instead of having a remote replica where you can actually get the data if your local one is hit by a tornado or something, you don't have that reliability. So am I missing something, or is it?
So in the case of a disaster where your whole data center goes down, you're right, there's a small window there where you could lose just the data that you've sent out, the metadata, and you haven't set out the data. That's true. The reason why we do this local write, though, is we can, we're still fault tolerant to individual failures, both for the local replicas and for the client itself.
Thanks. Ted Wauber, MSR, Silicon Valley. So in the case of your write, in the case of your read, how do you guarantee that the read is always gonna be a local read? For example, if one of the remote replicas has a more recent timestamp?
So you can't, we don't guarantee that the read will be a local read, but it's the common case that you will see a read, the data read coming from a local replica.
I see. And in your evaluation, did you have writes generated at all the replicas or only at one?
Sorry?
In your evaluation, did you have writes generated at all replicas or only at one?
In our evaluation, we wrote to all the replicas and we read from all the replicas.
No, I mean, did you have them generated at all replicas at all the site at both sites?
Our client was only at the local cluster.
Okay.
Hi, Alex Schreier, Yale Research. The reason why you would use the ABD algorithm is because its feather model is weaker than the one Paxos needs, or state machine replication. Since you're strengthening the feather model, you're allowing for less kind of feather. What is the advantage of using the ABD algorithm and not state machine replication?
So we implemented both kinds, really.
But did you see a performance advantage, or what kind of advantage do you?
So we didn't explicitly evaluate that, but my feeling, of course, is that for simple reason, right, ABD should be faster because there's less steps on the way.
That's not necessarily true. In the fast mode of Paxos, there are even less steps than ABD. But I think it's an interesting question since the failure models are now comparable. So, mm-hmm.
So one thing I'd like to note is that we think this approach could probably be applied to a lot of different algorithms, and we've done it for ABD and Paxos, or Paxos-like algorithms.
Yael Melman, EMC. I don't understand why you have to read for multiple nodes. You keep multiple nodes for redundancy or availability, but why not read only for your local one?
So I think maybe it's a little misleading because we only had a client in one data center, but this should be applied to when there are clients in multiple data centers. So the reason why we do that is to keep the data consistent between all the data centers. So a client can talk to these replicas from any data center.
Right, but a client is, if the data is always consistent on all nodes, then every client will have consistent data on its local node. So why go it all to remote node?
So I might not be understanding the question correctly, but the reason why we have it in remote locations is one of the reasons is disaster tolerance, and the other, of course, is access locality. So it helps to have remote copies because your application itself is distributed, so basically your clients are also in these different data centers.
Right, so but then you should read only from your local node.
Maybe we can take it offline.